Going to call the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources to order. Happy Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday, everybody.
Yay.
And we are going to open our public hearing on House Bill 2038. And I'm going to hand the gavel over to my vice chair and go join the speaker to talk about one of our favorite projects.
Well, thank you for being here today, you two. So I would like to allow you to go in any order you'd prefer, Speaker Kotek and Representative Klim.
Good morning, colleagues. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, and Speaker of the House. It's lovely to be back in Ag and Natural Resources, talking about one of our favorite programs, Farm to School and School Gardens, Garden Education Programs. And thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Klim and I have, I think we're going on 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years of coming to this committee and talking about the value of farm to school. Many of you know the history. We started off with positions in the Department of Ag and the Department of Education, and then we moved to grants, and we've further evolved this program to say this is a commitment that we all value, and you're going to hear, I'm sure, today how well this program has been performing. And this is really a conversation at this point around, do we have the will to continue to fund this on a regular basis? We have not, up until this point, put the investment we need permanently into the budget. Certainly, we're facing a budget shortfall. And I would just encourage all of us that if this is something we care about together, that we find the offsets or find the revenue to continue to fund it. It's done what we've asked it to do. It's doing great work in the communities, connecting our agricultural communities with our schools, you know, creating an environment where students can learn about agriculture and the things, you know, they grow in their school gardens. So it's an excellent program. I've never heard a person say they didn't like it. Now the question is, are we going to fund it and fund it permanently? So I fully support that, and I'll hand it over to my fine colleague on the Kotek Klim Roadshow on Farm to School.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Klim here, and I represent District 21, which is here in Salem. And I can't go further without saying the one person we're missing is our friend Representative Gilliam, who has also been along with us for most, if not all, of the journey. And we were, the three of us, awarded a really neat honor last summer and got to go to a real farm environment, a party to celebrate Farm to School. And so we certainly hope he's listening. If not, I'll go give him an audio recording and he can hear it. But I think the relationship between actually Representative Gilliam and his district and people like Speaker Kotek and myself and our districts symbolize what Farm to School is all about, which is the notion that Oregonians need each other from rural and urban Oregon. And over the years, we developed a program that clearly benefits school kids, clearly benefits growers, as you'll see today, has environmental benefits and other benefits. But the part I'm not sure I anticipated in the very beginning, when I was thinking about how to, you know, make more money for farmers, and Speaker Kotek was thinking about how can kids get better food and learn, you know, about agriculture, I wasn't understanding the value it would have in proving that Oregon is one state, and while we're diverse, we still need each other. Urban people can't eat without rural Oregon, and rural Oregon doesn't have the customer base on its own without urban eaters, and that's what's so important. And, you know, I wish we could somehow figure out that every policy has this reciprocal benefit of showing each other how much we really need each other, because they all don't. Sometimes, obviously, we have diverse districts, and not everybody in our districts agree with each other. But throughout Oregon on this bill, no matter which legislative district you're in, I think you will find unanimous support. So it just comes down to, as the speaker said, can we prioritize this within the budget process by finding an offset or figuring out revenue and a different way to pay for it than we have in the past? And we've got lots of people here, so I'm not going to say any more. But thank you for having us.
Thank you. Are there questions for the speakers? Any questions today?
Yeah, well,
okay, yes.
So what is the added cost?
The added cost?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about if we have the...
Madam Chair and Representative Barreto, actually, the bill just asked to be flat-funded. One of the challenges is we expanded the program last year to a statewide grant program and put in enough money to make it a statewide grant program, and we actually changed the statute to essentially reflect that it's going to be available statewide, and in doing so, we took away the competitive grant aspect of it and just said it's available to everyone. The governor's budget had zero funding for it and had a line that said it's so popular people should donate to it, and I'm sure they will. Well, that's not, we don't want to assume that's true, because these farmers count on the income and these kids count on the food, and there might be some donations certainly that could come in, but that's not a way to show our commitment to it. So this bill tries to just keep it flat funded, which is a statewide grant program, 5 cents per meal, and not ask for more. The co-chairs, I think, have it at maybe half of that. So we'd have to figure out how to change the statute and go back to a competitive grant, which would mean some schools just don't get it.
Okay.
And may I?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair and Representative Barreto, I think you're going to see an amendment to potentially alter this to upgrade it to what the 5 cents per meal would actually meet for the current biennium. Okay. But
that would be good.
But
thank you.
That's where it comes from. Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you. More of a statement. This theme is to buy local and buy Oregon. I like that. I like that.
We should mention the Bio-Oregon bills we've passed before, because Representative Escobar was the chief co-sponsor of those bills the entire time as well, and Farm to School was one subset of trying to use our tax dollars to procure more locally. It's more exciting to talk about feeding cute school kids than just buying paper from Oregon paper companies, but the reality is it's the same concept, which is trying to keep our money local.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony.
Enjoy the testimony. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, so we're going to go on to Aaron. Is it Poplack on a food corps? And Rick Sherman, Department of Ed.
Please, thanks. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Clem and members of the committee, my name is Aaron Poplack. I'm a native Oregonian and a product of Oregon's K through University of Oregon public school system. I currently live in Portland, where I work with Food Corps, a national service organization. In my role as the Food Corps Fellow, I support a network of 10 Food Corps service members across the state who provide hands-on food, garden, and agricultural education to schools across the state, from North Powder to Gold Beach. I'm here today to ask you to pass House Bill 2038 with the -2 amendments and to continue funding for Oregon's innovative farm-to-school program. I am also asking all of you to personally champion this bill in your caucuses, because we know that the real fight happens in ways and means. So please listen carefully to the stories that you hear today and share those with your colleagues who are not here with us. Farm-to-school programs work to get local foods into school cafeterias. They support Oregon farmers and processors, and by extension, its rural communities. And they help kids develop lifelong relationships with healthy foods and with Oregon agriculture. Oregon has been building its farm-to-school program since 2007, when chief sponsors Representative Clem and Representative Tina Kotek started working together to support healthy kids and healthy rural economies. We now have positions in 2 state agencies and a grant program that benefits farmers, processors, and students all over the state. Oregon's investments have helped 190 Oregon producers and processors put their foods directly onto the lunch trays of over 230,000 students across the state. This investment is only strengthened by grant funds that support schools in providing kids with hands-on food, garden, and agricultural-based education. Together, these local purchasing and education programs catalyze investment in Oregon's schools, in Oregon's rural economy, and in the health of our kids. This state funding is crucial for helping school districts prioritize and afford local products for their school meals. Today, Representative Clem asked specifically for the committee to hear from farmers and kids, so most of the testimony today will be from farmers and kids. We will hear from the Farm to School Program Manager at the Department of Education, and then we have a lineup of folks that includes five producers and Oregon processors, a teacher, and three different students who have enjoyed the Farm to School programs at their schools. Cassandra Griffin with Upstream Public Health will wrap up and field any questions you may have. And in closing, and given that today, as Representative Clem has said, is both Valentine's Day and Oregon's birthday, I'm once again calling you to pass House Bill 2038-2, because there really is nothing more lovable than a program that supports Oregon's farmers and Oregon's kids at the same time. Thank you.
Welcome, Rick.
Hello, Representative Clam, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is, for the record, my name is Rick Sherman. I'm the Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Coordinator with the Department of Ed across the street. Also with me, but not representative, I'm my counterpart with the Department of Ag's, Amy Gilroy, that's sitting back there. Say hey, Amy. So I'm going to be very brief since we have a huge list of people to get to. I'm just going to paint you a little picture of how things have been going for the grant recently. So with that in mind, the part of the grant that has been for a reimbursement of Oregon grown or processed food, we're on target to have all the funds spent for this biennium ending June 30th. 144 school districts opted in for this portion of the grant. Students attending these districts represent 90% of all lunches served in the state. 263 tons of just produce produce that was Oregon grown or processed were claimed by Oregon school districts. 263 tons, and that's just the produce. That's not all the any other things like the meat and everything like that. But we have them weigh that stuff, so it's kind of nice to for a visual. For the part of the education grant where we teach kids about the school, we had 34 school districts apply for that part and were awarded. We have maps in your electronic file that plot out these people for a visual that can show you, like, you know, these were the people that are eating the food. These were the people that were teaching about the food. And then the last part of it are the Oregon vendors, the farmers, ranchers, producers that have purchased or that have contributed to this program. We have a map in there as well somewhere, I believe. But basically, we've had my counterpart, Amy, has provided some stuff for us. Schools purchased fruits and veggies from 74 Oregon companies for just fruits and veggies, spending about $2.4 million in total. Schools that purchased meat, seafood, or poultry from 27 Oregon businesses, spending about $500,000. And then schools purchased dairy products like yogurts and cheeses from 15 Oregon dairy companies that are local, spending about $500,000 in addition to that as well. So that's what we have. We have those the maps in your files, and I, myself, and Amy are available for comments if you guys have any questions.
Thank you. I'm just going to, unless there's a really burning question for these two, I'm going to just get through testimony. We can summon people back up.
Thank you.
Randy Kiyokawa, Krista Svensson, and Susie Crater. Crater. Welcome. Randy, I've got you first.
Okay. For some reason, I thought I was going to be last, but I'll go first.
It doesn't matter to me. However, you all have it arranged.
Representative Clem, committee, my name is Randy Kiyokawa. I'm a third generation from Parkdale, Oregon, which is located in the beautiful Hood River Valley. I respectfully ask that you support House Bill 2038 by preserving or expanding the funding for Oregon's farm to school programs, the school garden programs. Oregon's farm to school and school to garden programs help kids, families, farmers, ranchers, orchardists, and the Oregon economies simultaneously with the same dollar allocated by you. The farm to school program has directly affected our farm by allowing me to move smaller sized fruit and pears that are sometimes discarded in a normal distribution channels. Currently, we have provided apples and pears to Portland, David Douglas, and Hood River County school districts. In 2016, students from these schools have received over 81,600 pounds, which is about 20 tons from our farm alone. Extrapolated over producers throughout Oregon, your investment is significant. I have positioned my family farm to supply schools in the future by building a fruit processing warehouse that'll pass a third-party food safety audit. The increased revenue from the farm-to-school program and other direct marketing aspects of our operation have allowed my employees to earn a higher-than-average wage and to work during periods when they would otherwise be idle. The business plan creates jobs, adds revenues to the state coffers through payroll taxes, and increases the purchasing power of our employees. These are just a few of the real benefits I have experienced. But please let me tell you how I've seen it affect the kids through the schools that are receiving our fruit. The flavor of our tree-ripened apples are second to none. Unless there's other apples and pear producers, then maybe second to you guys, too. So instead, the fruit that's distributed through the normal channel, sometimes going to the garbage cans, our apples and pears are actually eaten. Let me share one of the examples with you. One day at our farm stand, I was just visiting with customers, and this one lady approached me. She had her kids in tow, and she came up. She had this big smile on her face, and I thought, oh, geez, what did I do? But she said, thank you. And I said, for what? And she said, she explained how her son did not really like fruit until that they had one day that he had one of our apples. And so she had to go and bring he brought her whole family, but he brought the son up just to go and pick some apples and take it back so they could have it later. So those immediate impacts of not only getting fruit to them, but fruit that they will then see the farm at some point is invaluable. Not only does this program work for local and sustainable reasons, it works for the kids. Thank you for your consideration of the continued funding for this valuable program and appreciating its positive, healthy lifestyle impacts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, Chairman Clem and fellow committee members, my name is Krista Svensson, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 2038. I am not a farmer. I am a second-generation commercial fisherman who was based out of the state of Oregon. And I've worked for the last 11 and a half years in Astoria, Oregon, for a seafood processor that is a third-generation family-owned business. And I've got to say, when we started the Boat to School program in 2012, it was not an easy decision for our company, I think for the Ben Lapine School District, or for anyone else. The common belief at that point in time was kids didn't like wouldn't eat fish, but that wasn't the only challenge. And it really was House Bill money for the Farm to School program, as it was called at that time. We didn't even have a name for Boat to School. But it really was the funding that gave the school districts the confidence to go out and try bringing seafood, which is also an allergen. People weren't familiar with cooking it. There just were a number of things that went along with it. And as we have worked through the program, we've seen incredible success, and that's come through the vision and hard work of a whole number of people, including a lot of folks at Bornstein. You know, in 2015, 2016, our company has received over $5,000 in grant funding, which tells us that children in Oregon are eating local seafood. But it's been even more encouraging to see school districts like LeGrand, which is not even close to the Oregon coast, reordering our products. We've worked with, since 2012, Ben Lapine, that was our first school, Tiger Tualatin, the Centennial School District, Astoria. We've had students come into our plants. We've done Seaside. We've worked with Newport and Tillamook. So that's a lot of kids that we've touched in the last 5 years. And I think it's been incredibly encouraging to work both in seafood sales and education. The pilot project in Seaside, Oregon, that's the first school that I went to when I moved here from Alaska. I moved here in fifth grade, and I'm getting to work with fifth graders. And more excitingly to me, I had exactly one school lunch in the school district when I moved here. It was fish day. It was nothing like I'd had in Alaska. I didn't really know what it was. And so when I, 25 years later, went to Bend Lapine and had a cold water shrimp salad, and the choices were pasta bar, shrimp cocktail, shrimp salad. They were doing Dover. They were doing rockfish. It was exactly what my friends and family in Oregon for the last 25 years had been eating. And that is just so encouraging to me as a producer to see the changes, whether it's apples, seafood, other forms of protein, vegetables. The quality improvement I've seen for children in the Boat to School program has been incredibly encouraging. So in addition to the food component, there's been increased education of seafood for our school children. We've had increased interaction with our competitors and with our fishermen to build unified messaging about the value of seafood in the state of Oregon. It's led to increased visibility for our fishermen. Often in coastal communities, we hear fishing is dead. That isn't the case. You know, we had over $92 million worth of landings of seafood along the coast, which is significant for all of our coastal communities. And teaching our future, which is our children, that seafood isn't dead and is of value is incredibly important. And lastly, it's given us a chance to talk with kids about jobs in our coastal communities that they can grow up and aspire towards, whether that's an international salesperson such as myself, a fisherman, a processor, a scientist that does research on seafood. There's any number of opportunities, and that's been incredibly encouraging as well. So rural communities, and especially coastal communities, are benefiting from the Boat to School program. It's been exciting to work with children and their families to get them excited about fresh and local products and to create a larger platform for discussion about how we've used ocean stewardship within the state of Oregon. I'm thankful to have been a part of the initial Boat to School program, and I appreciate your consideration and your support in continuing this programming in the future.
Thank you very much. Please.
Hi, Representative Clem and members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Creeder. I'm a fifth-generation Oregon farmer. My husband and I and our son, who graduated from college, has come back to the farm, and he is returning to the farm to hopefully keep it in the sixth generation. I've lived in Oregon all my life, and I'm farmed all my life. Representative Clem, I hope your family's orchards are doing well with this harsh weather. Our farm encourages the committee to support House Bill 2038 to preserve and expand funding for Oregon's Farm to School and School to Garden program. This program is important to small Oregon farmers like us. Our farm participates in Oregon Farm to School and School to Garden program by selling blueberries and blackberries to school. We have sold fruit to local schools such as McMinnville and Dayton, right in our own backyard, and as well as schools in Scappoose, Bedford, Tiger Tualatin, Cascade, Centennial, and as far away as Le Grand. We have totaled up to over $22,000 in school to sales. I don't know how many pounds that is. I forgot to add that up. We would not be able to compete with large suppliers such as Driscoll's or Nature Ripe, or the distributor giants such as We would not be able to compete with large suppliers like Nature Ripe or Driscoll's, or distributing giants such as Sysco, Food Services of America without this program. We feel it important for Oregon students to know where their food comes from. This is important in building a lasting relationship with these young people who will soon become our future customers. As students, these young people learned the importance of buying local and to maintain local source of food, not to keep only to keep their carbon footprint small, but to see how their local suppliers grow and handle their food. Not some faceless supplier, but an actual person who grows and delivers healthy products. Our farm employs over five full-time employees and then more in the summertime. Our processor is a small local facility that freezes and sorts and puts our berries in a 30-gallon box, and then we ship them to a local freezer unit, and from there it's distributed to the end users. Hopefully our end user will be a local Oregon school lunch program funded by House Bill 2038. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I would do questions, but we've got so many people. I'll probably just keep moving. But thanks so much for your testimony. And let me ask Richard Dambrov Sierra, a student from Kalapuya High School, and Ellie I'm just going to say Ellie Odell to join us.
I think we're substituting the teacher for Val and another student.
Sure.
For the high school, is that right? We didn't mean to put Richard on the spot if he didn't want to.
No.
Whichever three you like.
Taking a place of Richard Dambrow.
That's fine. We'll just have him say your name for the record. I will comment while we're in transition. It's particularly gratifying for me to see Randy here, not because I'm overly biased towards pears, which I probably am, but the way I first started thinking about this concept was about 5-6 years before I ran for office. I was sitting on our tractor or on our orchard on a tractor staring at the Parkdale Elementary School, which literally abuts our orchard. And I thought, I wonder if they buy what if they even buy Hood River fruit? So to hear Randy say that the Hood River County School District is one of his customers, that is exactly what I was wondering and hoping that if it wasn't the case, eventually it would be the case. And that same story has been replicated many times in this committee where farmers who literally abut schools have said, I was not selling to, in Jervis, I can remember, I didn't sell to them. They didn't have the money to buy from me. Now they do. And that, like, 200 yards, it's not even a food mile, it's food yards at that point. Just going only a few hundred feet is the definition of, how to think about sustainability. So thanks. Good to see you, Randy. He's a heck of a businessman. I was always lazy. He's hauling himself into the holiday market, making all these deals, and I'm just driving around and then dropping it off a quarter mile away at the co-op. So I know it's had its struggles, but very successful orchard. Okay, welcome. Thanks for coming down. Who would like to start?
Chairman Clem and members of the committee, my name is Valerie Cunningham. I am a student at Kalapuya High School in Bethel School District in Eugene. We have a nutrition and agriculture program, which is funded by the Oregon Farm to School grants. And six other students have come with me. Would you mind standing up? Thank you. At Kalapuya High School, I am what you could call a familiar face. I have taken a leadership position in my school, and this year have had the most esteemed privilege to be Kalapuya's student representative for the school board. But above all of that, I sit before you today as a student. 3 years ago, Principal Stefan Almack approached me with a radical ambition. What if we built a farm? It was an idea, he said, that he had been toying with for some time. He wanted help from students so that students could have the opportunity to leave on a school what some of us desire to leave on the world, a legacy. A legacy indeed. In the years that have followed, I've watched students flourish with the farm. Students have been able to work outside and gain hands-on experience. They've learned how to plant and harvest seeds, how to compost, and about where their food come from. These skills have been carried on into their daily lives. They have learned how to cook meals and use the farm experience to be a mindful consumer. I have learned all of these skills as well. Being outside has improved mental and physical health and focus in studies. Watching the students grow has been a humbling experience that I will carry with me for the rest of my life. The legacy of the farm has improved the lives of students in Kalapuya and throughout the district by providing healthy food for salad bars. The legacy has been translated to the young students who come to the farm and learn from our students. I leave you today with one question. Aside from being representatives, of being chairman, of being on this committee today, what will your legacy be? Thank you very much.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, my name is Sierra Scalos and I live in Eugene. I'm a student at Cowpea High School in the Bethel School District. We have a nutrition and agriculture education program, which is supported with the funding from the Oregon Farm to School Promise. I am part of the sustainable agriculture class this term. As part of our class, we have done many experiments and inquiries about the farm. Students have been a part of the Bethel Farm from the beginning. Students helped come up with the idea, the design, and most of the farm was built by the students last summer. Every person I've seen work or visit on the farm has left with a positive experience and learned so much. Personally, this term, I have learned how to construct a worm compost bin for the Bethel Farm. I drew up and designed the bin big enough for all of the district's food scraps. I came up with a materials list, a cost estimate, and did a lot of research on how to create a healthy environment for the worms. Everything is ready for it to be built and put to use. Because of the farm program at Kalapuya, I have taken classes about crop planting, tree pruning, and greenhouse management. In these classes, we have to work together to accomplish our task. I have learned how to be a part of a working group together to make things happen. Without this program, I would not know how to plant a garden and take care of it, but now I can walk out of my school and know how to provide for myself growing food. I feel more connected to my school, and I do better with my studies because of this program. I wouldn't have graduated without this school and the opportunity to learn in a hands-on way like the farm. We learn through real-world experience, and the farm program plays a huge role in that. Everything I do in life going forward is because of this education. There are so many opportunities to learn through being on the farm, and without Kalapuya, or without that, Kalapuya wouldn't be the same. Before this program, I had little to no idea where my food came from, but now I know so much more about how to eat well and how to shop for healthy food. I also eat more fruits and vegetables because we have access to the free produce available at our farm. It is important for our kids to get locally grown food and school lunch. Many students in our district get free lunch, and our farm can give them better options. This fall, we helped harvest tomatoes that were put into salad bars throughout all of the Bethel School District. Our farm program also has gives me the opportunity to teach other students about farming and give back to our community. Of all the things I learned in high school, I will remember my time on the farm and the things I learned there. Thank you.
Hello, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Ellie Manugian-Odell, and I'm here from Corvallis on behalf of Stalbush Island Farms. We've been involved with the Oregon Farm to School program for several years now. We initially got involved because we saw that their mission was really similar to ours. Our co-owner, Carla Chambers, created a coloring book a while back, which I think kind of demonstrates what she cares about. It basically encouraged children to color in brown and white foods, which are staples of the basic American diet, and it encouraged them to fill their plates with a more colorful plate filled with fruits and vegetables. At Stalbush, we talk about how 1 in 5 children suffer between the ages of 6 and 19 suffer from childhood obesity, which can lead to a lot of chronic health issues. We really feel that through education and exposure to fruits and vegetables from a young age is how you combat those issues. So I personally was able last month to go to some of the farm to school programs, which are in the Corvallis district. I was in an elementary school with students a lot younger than the one sitting next to me. And one thing that really stood out to me is that there were kids getting really excited about green pea couscous salad, which I definitely did not know what couscous was when I was in kindergarten. So it's really cool to see kids, you know, being exposed to our fruits and vegetables, but also being exposed to the foods that we can pair with those fruits and vegetables. As a producer that ships nationally and internationally, we really see that it's our duty to work on combating health issues that can be solved pretty easily through diet. And without the grant, we don't think Oregon students would have as much access to the healthy diet, which would include fruits and vegetables, especially ones that are grown in their own backyard. The other thing that I saw students eating were berries from our farm, which had been grown pretty not too far outside of city limits, processed a little bit closer to city limits and then shipped straight to our schools, which is a much shorter distance than where some of our other fruits and vegetables go. So we really would like to continue working with the Oregon Farm to School program and see it flourish, because we think it's a big part in fulfilling our mission, which we think we have in common.
Thank you. Thanks very much for coming today. Okay, I've got Jeff Thomas, Abby, and Cassandra.
Hey, Katie. Okay. I'm going first. Oh, man. It's a fun spot.
Let's get Abby.
Okay.
Great hat, Abby.
Mm-hmm. Chair Klim and members of the committee, my name is Abigail Johnso. I'm a freshman at South Salem High. I've been in gardens for as long as I can remember. My mom is a gardener, so I learned a lot from her and at my elementary school in California. Which is why when I ended up at Parrish Middle School on the first day of sixth grade, I was surprised to learn how little the others knew about gardening. When asked where a tomato comes from, kids were vague with answers like Safeway or Winco. From that first garden day on, I realized how important the need for agricultural training is to this next generation. As we spent days in the garden, I found three major things that happened. First, our class became more aware of each other, and we grew as a community. Although we all came from different backgrounds, we were unified, working outside together. We became less narcissistic and focused more on the whole of our group. Out in the garden, we were all equals, and we were all community. Our labels were melted. The stereotypical popular kid could work beside the nerd, and so forth. We all loved the garden because we didn't have to worry so much about who was who. In addition, gardens teach us how to live a healthier life. Oregonians value a healthy, happy, and wholesome lifestyle. And yet, my generation would often rather be binging on Netflix or YouTube. Most of my peers haven't learned the refreshing feeling of being outside, running around, and exploring. I'll admit, the first time my class went into a learning garden, there were a few bored faces. Everyone was very excited to get outside and do something other than conventional learning, but they didn't want to be outside working. Soon, expressions changed as we started digging in the dirt and learning about composting and aquaponics. I saw people light up. Throughout the year, kids were more and more receptive to trying the vegetables they had grown, partly because they were proud of them and also because they understood more than ever their benefits. Third and finally, there's an old saying about people giving fish versus teaching them to fish. I believe it's the same with gardening. Parrish Middle School is a Title I school, which means we have a lot of kids in poverty with food insecurity, knowing there might not be dinner when they get home. That's a scary reality to live in, but the learning gardens help change that. If we can teach our kids to grow vegetables, we are not only exposing them to healthier food, but we are also giving them the means to feed themselves and their families. In conclusion, I would like to say that I know Salem School Gardens have impacted many people. Of course, not everyone is going to become a farmer after being in a learning garden. But for many people, learning that they can grow their food inspires hope. I know for me, the garden program has given me new ideas about the world and the way I should live, which is why I strongly believe that everyone should have the opportunity to try it out. Cutting funding for gardens hurts our school's missions to help children be strong, healthy, and smart. If we take away school gardens, you take away an opportunity for growing community, not just vegetables. If we take away school gardens, you take away new insights and perspective. And finally, if we take away school gardens, you take away the seeds of a healthy lifestyle. Thank you for your time and attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Jeff.
Okay. My name is Jeff Thomas. I'm a third-generation tree fruit grower from Kimberly, Oregon. Back in, well, first, I think you guys should give yourselves a pat on the back. Because nationwide, I don't think you know how revered you guys are for what you've done here. I mean, it's you hear people from New York back east saying, wow, how did Oregon do this? And it's really because of a lot of people like you allocating these dollars. So I just want to say thank you for that. We started out in this thing in 2007. Ben Lapine School approached us about getting some, local fruit into their schools, and it started out 10 to 15 cases a week. Last year, between peaches, apples, nectarines, plums, pears, and I think all the kids' favorite Asian pears, we shipped roughly 5,000 cases. Starting out with the farm to school has actually allowed us to become totally self-sufficient. We pack our own stuff. We have always had homes for the larger fruit, retail outlets, wholesale outlets, but the smaller stuff we struggled in selling. So once Ben Lapine came and approached us, we were able to start packing a little bit more ourselves, a little bit more to where we're totally self-sufficient now. This allows us, as Randy said, we pay higher than normal because we're able to do it ourselves. We're able to become a totally vertically integrated outfit here. Keeping the money here, I think the figures I saw with this farm to school, I believe it's 4 to 5 cents every meal is what you guys are looking for local. Keeping that in Oregon is huge for a lot of small communities. It allows us to pay our workers a higher wage, which in turn allows them to go shop at the local grocery stores, go to local hardware stores. Depending on which economist you ask, you have a 3 to 5 time turnover of that dollar there. It stays local there. So I think that's probably the biggest benefit to having this money allocated this way. I've been on our local school board for 10 years. I mean, I see what you guys see with the school budgets. I see, what we're facing as far as a budget, trying to figure out how to spend money or how much to put in there. The reason Ben Lapine came to us, said, hey, we're paying this amount of money. Can we get more from you? I said, yeah, I think we can do a better deal there. And just by going through us, the amount of food they're able to get to their kids, they've said it's around 500 cases more for the same amount of dollars there. You get more bang for your buck when you try and go local, try and get the farmers involved there. I mean, it's one of the best ways you can spend your dollar, in my opinion, there. So the more you guys put towards this, you're going to get a lot more out of it there. The outreach is, the kids, we've had kids from Ben come out, and they're just amazed that that's the tree my apple came off of, or there's where it's packed, or they're just amazed at how they can actually look and see. That, as she said, they thought it came from a store. Mm-hmm. They didn't get to see how we do it, how we grow it, what we do, why we fertilize, why we thin, why we pick it a certain way, why we store it at this temperature. As generations have progressed, the distance between farm and plate has gotten greater and greater and greater. This program actually helps bring kids back to understand, this is how it's done. It doesn't come from Safeway. It doesn't come from the cafeteria. It comes from this guy. This is the tree it was growing on. So it's truly an amazing, amazing deal you guys got here. And again, you guys should really stand up, give yourself a round of applause, because nationwide, I mean, you guys are really, really revered for what you've done there. And I hope we can keep adding and building towards this there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, everyone. Cassandra Griffin, Upstream Public Health. I'm going to make a few wrap-up points and hopefully answer any questions that you have. And then I think that there's a few more people who are also signed up who weren't part of our scripted lineup, but who also want to talk about this. I'm here on behalf of my organization, Upstream Public Health, and also on behalf of the Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Network, which is about 1,000 people around the state who care passionately about school food and school gardens. If we have time, do you think we can show 2 minutes of video? Are you up for that? And Misty, do you have that queued up?
As long as it's queued up, we do. Yeah.
Okay. This is a short video. Do you have that?
I haven't received it, but the projector is ready, so I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm not plugged in and ready. I sent it to Misty in the middle of the night. But if we're not ready, then let's not. I wanted to show just a little visual of one of the programs that's currently funded by the grant, actually in Representative Powers District. It's a school a program called Schoolyard Farm. And that was just to give you the visual of kids running happily through fields and talking about eating winter squash.
We may be able to plug them, because after you go, I want to give the committee members a chance to say what they think and ask questions.
Okay.
So that might give some plug-in.
Okay. We'll see if we can figure it out. Boring, respectful, clarifying points. The bill as written, 2038, is a slight expansion from current service level. It's the $5.6 million in the bill represents what it would cost to subsidize each school lunch served at 5 cents per meal. And we were trying to get there last session, and we didn't quite get there. So the current service level is $4.5 million. We're asking again for the same thing we asked for last session, which was $5.6 million. That money goes 80% to buying local food and 20% to the food, garden, and agriculture-based education programs. Mr. Thomas just said that sometimes it actually turns out that local producers can provide things to schools for better prices than the big distributors, and sometimes that's true. Other times it's not true, and what we're trying to do is give a few cents of incentive per meal served to ask the school districts to go find the local options. So sometimes they'll find cost savings, sometimes they'll find that it costs more. In a lot of the vegetables and berries in particular, it costs more to get them from Oregon than to get them from California. So we're trying to say buy local, buy local, buy local. It's not always a cost savings, although sometimes it is. The -2 amendments, which I think you have in front of you today, make a couple minor changes that I hope you will pass. It would restrict schools from spending their money on things that they are probably buying locally anyway, which is liquid milk and bakery products. We don't need to incentivize them to buy those things locally. And it would let a couple more types of organizations apply for the education funds, specifically education service districts, soil and water conservation districts, and tribal organizations. So those are minor, simple changes. One person who's missing here today is Michelle Marcustine Ratcliffe, Truett Family Foods. She's usually here. She is home with a sick kid today and sends her regrets. But a point that she asked me to make in closing for you guys is to understand that for a lot of the producers who are here today and others working in this field, they've invested their resources in developing the school market. They've built their relationships. They've developed the product. They've figured out that they can continue to grow small apples, not cut those trees down, because they have a market in the schools. And so if this program goes from a $4.5 million current service level to nothing, that's not just going to harm the kids, but it's actually going to do harm to Oregon's producers that have been working to build this program and build their businesses to work with the program. Ms. Svensson from Borenstein said that they've been working to package smaller portion sizes for schools. And Randy said that he invested in new facilities to make sure he had the right product available at the right time for schools. So if we cut to nothing, then we're doing harm to the producers who have been counting on this being a sustainable program. So thank you, like you said, for your investments in the program so far. I hope you will be able to continue them. We heard that these programs, Representative Smith, I'm sorry you missed the coastal representative, that talking about how we have vote to school affecting coastal communities. We have veggies and fruits and meats being purchased from all over the state and relevant education programs. So good for kids, good for farmers, good for the economy, and it is the most lovable thing for you guys to be thinking about on Oregon's birthday and Valentine's Day. Thank you all.
Thanks. Committee members should take a chance to make comments, ask questions. You think about computers. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, the gentleman from Kimberly, I'd like to chat with you later on, if you don't mind. I'm curious of where your ranch is.
Okay.
Because I'm picturing where that is.
60 miles northwest of John Day.
Well, I know where Kimberly is. I used to hunt up on Holmes Creek, but I want to know where your ranch is.
Okay.
Vice Chair McLean.
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell the chair that this is my favorite agenda that you've put on, and I think this is a great day to do it. And I got almost misty-eyed there as a fifth-generation Oregonian who made my four children pick hazelnuts on our 2.5 acres and also raise sheep because I wanted to make sure they had that agricultural experience that helped them understand where things came from and how hard it is to work to make good products and make sure that you've got quality coming off of your farm and your ranches. So thank you. And to the young people who spoke today, I got teary-eyed because I missed the classroom, and you guys made me so proud. And some of your writing is spectacular, and your ambition and your dreams are wonderful. And anything we can do to help our young people in the state of Oregon include this farm-to-school program, I think is fabulous because you're fabulous. But I really want to have folks look at that 4.5 million to 5.6 million and look at the spinoffs of that money. You are getting community, you are getting good learning atmospheres, and you are getting fresh and local food. How could we have any better program than that? So I know it's something that I think all of us really respect and appreciate Representative Clam and Speaker Kotek for bringing to the legislature over the years. But it's nice to be able to feel good about work, right? And so today I get to come to work and feel good about work. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Representative McKeon.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I appreciate all the work that everyone in the room has done to bring this project forward. And to you, Chair Clem and Speaker Kotek, kudos. It's a model program across the nation, and it's something I think we can all be very proud of. I just want to pull out one little piece, which is the boat to school. I am so proud of that. Everybody, you know, kids ought to eat fresh vegetables and fresh fruits, and we love salad bars, and we've cracked that nut. But to have a boat-to-school program is so incredibly unique. And for someone who comes from the coast and is of a different generation than a lot of you, we grew up in an era where we ate fish sticks on Fridays at school. It's just what you did. And without casting aspersions on Gorton's or whoever produced fish sticks back in the day, to have kids have an opportunity to eat fresh shrimp and rockfish and other real forms of fish, I am just tickled pink to know that this project is successful and that our kids have an opportunity to see what ocean-produced protein is. As the world continues to evolve and the population increases, we're going to rely on that protein that is produced in the ocean to feed a lot of us over time. And I'm just really tickled that this has been successful. To have kids in La Grande eating pink shrimp is just remarkable. And I'm just delighted for the efforts that have gone into making sure that not only do we have access to the education of where our food comes from, but to have access to really unique things that I think are our future is remarkable. So, Chair Clem, thank you for your work and for the last 10 years. Thank you to the committees that have supported this over the last 5 sessions. And thank you to you all for the work that you do. It's really important. Keep it up.
Okay, we ready for a video?
I've got it up here. Do you click the button?
Yeah, I think we're good.
This doesn't have a lot of audio, so if the audio is not loud, we'll be okay. And I'm going to run 2.5 minutes of it. Thank you.
right there at your doorstep, and you can see it, and you can breathe it, and you can feel it, and it's more real instead of this abstract concept of you should grow a farm, you should grow your own food for X, Y, Z reason. It's right there, and you're doing it, and kids see the value because every day they walk by that farm when they get off the bus, and they see that that's where the food is coming from. And then we bring it into the class, and they're eating it, and they're sharing the food and talking about recipes.
But I think it's important to do it at schools because it gives more kids an opportunity to understand how important gardening is. And they get the idea of, you know, you can grow your own food, you don't need to go to the supermarket and buy all this unhealthy food, you can do it at home by yourself. Yeah, because they don't have to go out looking. All they have to do is just come to school, and the resources are there.
Right there. Again, that was about Schoolyard Farm. It's one of the 24 organizations getting grants from the state for the education portion right now. And that's just an example of what it looks like to have a program in a school. So with that.
Thanks. Any further comments on this one? We have three more witnesses on this one. Representative Brock Smith.
I want to apologize to all of you for being late. This is a fantastic program. As a, still current Porterford-Langlois School District, I'm from the South Coast, and we've had school gardens in our Driftwood Elementary School for many, many years. And as a former Curry County Commissioner, I assisted Kathy Bowden and others in, you know, being part of the Farm to School program. Year before last, I believe, is when she was brought in. So you've already spoke about the amazing benefits, and very supportive, and I just want to thank all of you for all of your hard work and dedication with this program. So.
Thank you. Thanks, Representative Power.
Yeah, I just want to ask you one question. Thank you for showing that clip that used to be pretty close to my house. Yeah. So I know we heard a little bit about how important this is to producers and how important this is to schools. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, and I know the answer to this, the kind of community building that it also enables, because I know Schoolyard did sort of a crowdfunding within the Milwaukee Oak Grove community.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's something that our other schools also do, where like our mayors and city councilors show up to help.
Yeah. Thank you for the question, Chair Clem, Representative Power, members of the committee. I think that the Farm to School and School Garden programs build community in a bunch of different ways. So we heard from Abby that she feels like it builds community within a class to go out there and work on something tactile together. I think we heard from a couple of the producers that it gets community members out onto their farms. And it is also a great way for more community members to engage in what's going on in schools, go on field trips, see what their kids are doing, get excited about it. In the East John Day Watershed Council is one of the grantees, and they have talked about having more parent involvement in school with their revived agriculture program under this grant than they've had like in the past 20 years. So there's a lot of different ways that it's building community in schools and in communities. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for coming. I'm going to ask my last three, Jerome Rosa, Jenny Dressler, and Katie Fast, to come up. I will note in the transition, Brenda is our, wave your hand, Brenda, our Salem Kaiser school garden coordinator has to be proud of Abby and her both work but her testimony, because that was really incredible. And for those of you who are, I'm kind of interested in the number of school gardens, I don't know that we hit it exactly in our testimony. I know Representative Gilliam and I got to go see the 500th school garden in Oregon be started in Malala a few years ago, but I know we were over 600 last I checked, so we're, Rick, 651 school gardens around Oregon, which is incredible. We also, I know, lead the nation in local food procurement. At one point, we were over, I think, 25% of our food in schools being procured, which is by far the highest in the United States. And let's hear from our team. Jerome, I've got you signed up first, so please.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Jerome Rhodes, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. OCA is happy to support House Bill 2038. House Bill 2038 is good for Oregon and good for Oregon kids. As a state that's heavily dependent on agriculture, it's a great idea to ensure that our schools are feeding kids Oregon beef, Oregon wheat, fruit, and nuts. It's always good to support our local farmers and our ranchers. More importantly, grant funding that helps children understand agriculture will give our students a better sense of how food gets to their tables and how important Oregon agriculture is locally, nationally, and globally. In a time when we discuss at length the divide between urban and rural understanding, House Bill 2038 can be a small step in bridging that gap. OCA thanks Reps Clem, Smith, and Nose for this effort and encourage you to vote in favor of House Bill 2038. I do have to disagree with Rep McCune's comment regarding fish sticks. When I was in grade school, I always had fish sticks on Friday and would often trade my dessert for additional fish sticks. So,
as long as they had ketchup with them, sir, I was just fine.
I really enjoyed the fish sticks. I mean, thank you. Thank you.
Good morning. For the record, Katie Fass with Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'm here today in support of 2038 and request that you send it on to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. You know, I think Oregon is particularly well gauged for this type of program in terms of the size of the agriculture and the diversity of the agriculture. It just is a great opportunity for farmers, and you've heard that today, but also for that educational aspect that was added over time from the initial program and getting that connection back for school children to where their food comes from, how it's grown, why farmers use certain practices that they use, the seasonality of agriculture. There's so many great stories there, and that educational aspect, I think, is one of the big benefits that we see kind of added on to this program. So with that, I'll pass it on to Jenny.
Thanks. Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jenny Dressler, and I'm with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We are the state's largest general ag association, made up of about 7,000 farming and ranching families. I'm here today to also lend our support to House Bill 2038. You've heard from a lot of folks in the room today, farmers, students. A lot of these farmers are members of Farm Bureau and have been able to utilize this program and really connect students to agriculture. We're here today in particular because in 2015, when the expansion of the program passed and the educational grants were made available to some of the nonprofits, trade associations, and commodity commissions, we started hearing from a lot of our county farm bureaus about how, about ways that they were looking to partner with their local school districts and the potential utility of some of those funds in helping to get students out to the farms and vice versa. And so we've been really supportive of that component in particular and helping our folks make that connection, and we look forward to working through that program in the future. So my request, I echo Katie and others here, is that we move this bill forward onto Ways and Means to have that discussion. So thank you.
Thank you. More comments and questions on this bill? I will tell my vice chair, I thought about having this be the very first day of the committee to kind of like set the tone, but one, I didn't think about it soon enough, so I'm not sure with like the 4 days notice I gave them whether or not we could have got folks here. And second, Cassandra said, what about Oregon's birthday and Valentine's Day? Wouldn't that be better? So that's why you had to wait a few weeks for your best hearing so far. Okay, with that, thank you everybody for making the trip here, and I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2038.
So I think we need to move this one. Can you give me just a second to see if Rep. Wheeler
is in the hall? Sure.
Nice.
Yeah, they really do a good job.
You sign on to
it. No, we have to wait
for me. Yeah, I think what I got to try and get it into the natural resources sub, because they always put it in the Department of Education sub, because the money goes to the Department of Education first and then out through there. But I you know, it's not that the education sub doesn't care, but the ag people in the natural resources sub are usually well motivated. And we have three of them here, so.
Well, wherever you put it, let me know, and I'd love to go down if it's appropriate.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Yeah, great.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2525 and welcome Representative Bueller. Do you want to bring our other people up?
Yeah.
So I've got Vaughn Briggs from OSU Cascades.
Vaughn wasn't able to make it.
Oh, okay. Al, do you want to join Representative Bueller?
And
Philip Kennedy Wong.
Thank you for being
here. Sorry for making you wait. It was Farm to School Day. It's always an exciting time in the committee for Farm to School.
I was hoping I wasn't chasing out your audience.
Cleared the room right out.
Welcome. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Clem, co-chairs, and committee members. I bring to you House Bill 2525 today, and it addresses an important problem that many of you are well aware of, and that's that way too many people in Oregon are food insecure. It's estimated that almost 15% of Oregonians are challenged in terms of finding food nearly on a daily basis. This is 600,000 people, and we certainly see it in Central Oregon all too often. Besides being food insecure, protein is a specific problem. It's very hard to get protein distributed through the food banks. That's the problem. The solution I bring from a constituent, Professor Vaughn Briggs, who's at OSU Cascades, and he's worked diligently on this for the last 2 years, looking at programs all over the country and coming up with, I think, a very innovative, at least a solution which will help solve this problem. And Professor Briggs saw this as a problem since he is a hunter, a bird hunter specifically in Central Oregon, and there's a lot of that going on these days. And he routinely goes out on the weekends, and he can't use all the birds that he finds and shoots. And so he's tried to donate that to food banks. Well, there's just big barriers to that occurring in Oregon. Not intentional, but just how statutes are written. Food banks basically can't accept this game. So he's come up with a solution in order to help get these game animals, not only birds, but also animals and fish to a certain extent, into the food banks. So what House Bill 2525 does, two main things. Right now, based on statute, you couldn't even donate birds or fish. They're not in the definition of game animal that could be donated to a food bank. And the second thing, and probably most importantly, it expands those who can determine that game meat is fit for human consumption. Right now, statutes are written that it requires a state employee actually to do so, and we just don't have the bandwidth to do that. This bill would allow the Department of Agriculture to train others, mainly people who are associated with charitable organizations like food banks, to be able to make this determination. The expected outcome is a good one. We'd expect that thousands of pounds of game meat protein would now be able to be distributed through food banks in Oregon, and hopefully lessen the number of people that are food insecure. So I thank you for your attention. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Representative McEwen.
Chair Clem, Representative Buehler, I appreciate you bringing this bill. I find it fascinating. I just have a kind of a technical question. Two people in my household now, used to be four, we consumed a lot more protein. If I shoot an elk and I take it to a packing house to be hung and then cut and wrapped and frozen, would that constitute an inspection that would allow me then to donate some of that meat to a food bank? Or does it have to go beyond that?
Yeah. Thank you, Representative. At this point, it would not be allowed because it has to be directly inspected by a employee of the Department of Fish and Wildlife or Department of State Police.
So should I choose to donate half of that elk, what process would I go through if this bill passes? How could I be of assistance to that food bank?
You would have to take it to a processing facility that's been certified and that the people there have been trained to determine that that game meat is fit for human consumption.
So that adds another step for me as a hunter.
No,
the last elk I shot, I took to a packer in Madras.
Yeah.
And then went back over and picked it up a couple of weeks later. I had them hang it, cut it, and wrap it.
Yeah.
So before I took it then to that processor, I would have to find somebody on that Sunday when I'm headed home to inspect that or take it someplace else.
Hey, currently or under the bill?
Under the bill.
No, hopefully that processor would have gone through.
So
that
then that
training.
Processor in Madras could be licensed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so
that's really
certified.
Helpful.
Extends
right.
ODA's current power to do that to processors who you might very normally use, and as more of them get the ODA kind of proxy, you'll have many more people out there who could do the inspection.
Yeah.
And then I could take that frozen, once I go pick it up, then I could take it and donate it if I chose to. It would have some sort of stamp on it of some sort when they wrap it.
We'll have to think about that part.
How does the food bank know?
Food bank know that it was done by one?
The Department of Agriculture would certify those processors.
So then they would be able to identify that as having been certified. That's what I was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They
perfect.
Do it annually. They inspect those processors annually currently.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Further questions for Representative Buehler? Great. I know you may need to leave. You're welcome to stay, but if you have schedule issues, whatever's your preference.
I will stay for a little bit.
We already hear what Al has to say, at least. You can kick him under the table if he gets
thank
out
you.
Of line.
For the record, Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We love this concept. We support the bill. I've had a number of support the bill emails from members. One of them said, this is a great bill. When I donate the meat to the mission, they always tell me God bless, and then they give me a tax receipt. So I think it's great for everyone. We appreciate the representative bringing it forward. Thank you.
Philip, please.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, for record, Philip Kennedy Wong with Oregon Food Bank. We're here in support of House Bill 2525, and we'd be more happy to answer any questions. With respect to your question, Rep. McEwen, let me try to answer a question using an example. Actually, I'll give you two examples. So we have a food bank in Clatsop County where that director has been very entrepreneurial and has cultivated good relationships with the state police. And the state police, obviously, they are the game warden, so they bring confiscated kills, usually illegal kills, and they will bring it to that food bank already field dressed. And what our food bank has done in order to accept that is, first they had to purchase commercial-grade meat grinding equipment, and then they've taken out a license from the ODA to be able to grind it into smaller packets so then they can give it to the local charities in the area that they serve. So that's a way that we have sort of worked with the system, but certainly in that particular case, it is a state entity, the state police that brings that, the animal. It gets a little trickier, obviously, when it's a private citizen because there is a food safety concern, and sometimes it's hard to get any certainty as to the safety of the food. And I remember one of the stories that that same food director shared with me was, you know, I've had people come up to me, you know, it's blazing hot sun, and they pull up in their car, and they pull up, like, their ice box, and they got fish they want to donate. But for him, you know, he has no idea how long it's been sitting in that, you know, ice box. And, I mean, I'm sure it's edible, but certainly as an entity that has the broader responsibility of, you know, giving food to families that are hungry, there's a certain level of care you have to take in terms of accepting food. So, you know, typically, you know, he has turned down those types of donations. The second example I want to share with you was, some of you may have been here a couple years ago when we had a very similar situation where we had commercial fishermen who want to donate their bycatch. Mm-hmm. And for us to take the bycatch, it required a lot of, I would say, resources to make happen. So it would be typically you would get, you know, a very short notice, hey, I'm about to land and I've got X, you know, hundreds of pounds of fish. Do you guys want it? And then the challenge has always been for that food bank would be, boy, can I get 30, 40 volunteers at a moment's notice to come and clean the fish? And what they had to do was to find a fish cleaning business that would be willing to work at that sort of quick timeline, but certainly not do it pro bono because it's a cost to that business as well. And what we did with that legislation was there were some concerns that the fish cleaning business had, and that was, can they possess a fish bycatch, you know, because there are various agreements and treaties with respect to fish counts, so on and so forth. So what our bill did was to sort of help clarify that for the fish businesses so they could then take that that donation, process it, and they're actually able to keep the carcasses as part of the payment, but certainly but not all of the payment, and the carcasses typically has a secondary market like pet food. I do kind of see some very similarities to the bill that Rip Euler is presenting here. This is a way of facilitating, you know, a donation that otherwise might go elsewhere, and worse yet, you know, in our food waste system, which is something that obviously for us as an anti-hunger organization, we're very, very sensitive to. We, you know, we are in the business of feeding people, and if there's good food that's going to waste, we want to stop it from happening.
Questions for these gentlemen?
I don't mean to dominate this, but Philip, we have a situation on the coast where hatchery fish come back. A lot of them are very good shape. They're great fish, but there's a difficulty in getting them once they're done with the hatchery to get them to the food bank. And we can, on occasion, if the food bank is willing and they have volunteers available, take a truckload of those beautiful salmon that are going to go to waste to the food bank in Florence, and they will process them and freeze them and then be able to use them, which is incredibly high-quality protein. We're finding out now that with the shrimp fishermen, when they hit their quotas and their prices start to drop, they would be very interested in taking that excess and donating it to the food bank. But there are barriers there. It's really difficult for them to do. So I really appreciate this conversation. There's some very high-quality protein out there that's going to waste. And if this is one step in helping get us down that road, I appreciate it. But I think there's more work to be done here.
Any further questions at this point?
Happy to assist with amendments that people see. We know there's one technical fix that the Department of Agriculture would like, and we're more than willing to do that. But if there's other amendments you'd like, just please contact me.
Great. Okay, thank you. I think it's a good bill. I'm starting to feel guilty that I always eat every last scrap and even fight over who gets the back strap within the family sometimes. I probably should think about at least donating something. But
I think you'd like that part.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd like that part. Trust me, I'll take it home.
You're not getting it. Okay, with that, let's close the public hearing on... Oh, sorry, I forgot we had a late entrant. Bill Hoyt, do you want to come up on this one? Yeah, not close the public hearing.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Bill Hoyt. I'm a fifth-generation rancher in Lane in Douglas County. I just wanted to add to the conversation just as an interesting point from the previous bill. I donate about 5,000 pounds of beef to Portland Christian Elementary School every year, and it is I make bi-weekly deliveries, and it's a pure pleasure to be able to do that. In this sense, on this bill, I would be supporting it very much. One of the things that we are involved in right now is that the Western Oregon elk population has greatly increased, and we get several extra landowner preference tags. We also get damage tags. So I would be able on the ranching of my ground that I control to be able to take as many as 6 or 8 elk a year. And we have no, I mean, I'm searching around for people to fill these tags. And you know, it's not that difficult, but what I'd really rather do is be able to have the opportunity to donate that meat. And we have access to a USDA processor that, and also a custom processor that will do, take care of the meat in a fashion that is representative of how it should be done. And I feel like it's really a good opportunity to be able to do this. I just didn't want to pass the opportunity. I'm sorry to get in late, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity to input on this bill. Thank you.
Hey, Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you. And thank you for your donations. I really like the concept of this bill because we have some issues, especially in rural Oregon, where we have a lot of cattle ranchers on the South Coast. And in order for them to process to donate, they need USDA inspection over, and they have to go up to Springfield to get it. Now, it's my understanding that whenever you do take it to that USDA processing facility, they have to shut down their current processing so they can process your game animal?
That's correct. They would have a special day, then it would have to be processed. And we're there. That's what I do for a living. So we're in the meat business. And so I'm there every week. And I'm very familiar with how the process works. But, yes, they have a special game processing that they would take place away from the normal beef or pork or lamb processing that is USDA approved. That's true.
Thank you. And so we're looking actually at a concept in economic development and trade of being able to maybe have a ODA state standards. That's one of the reasons why I'm very interested in this bill, so that we can have some of the smaller processors that we've heard of today be able to get the training and the stamp to be able to certify these meats, not to take away from the larger processors by any means, but it adds, for me, living in Port Orford and having some of the best grass-fed beef out there at Cape Blanco, and it's less than 3 miles from where my restaurant used to be, but they have to take it and they have to haul it to Lane County, have it processed, and then haul it back in order for me to sell it. Adds an enormous amount of cost to it. And so if we were able to not only process game animals so that we can donate those to our local food banks for the needed protein, as you're doing, and again, I appreciate that, but also be able to process local cattle and sheep in our area and be able to sell it, the cost to our citizens would be much less because the transportation costs would be taken out of the the price.
Representative Smith, I am aware that there are processing facilities on the coast at this point. The other thing is that there is commercially sold game meat that is processed when it comes into the processor in a live state. And so one of the things that hangs up processors is the timing from the time that the animal is harvested to when it gets to the processor. And that's a critical window. And where the commercially sold game animals are sold, they arrive at the processor in a live state, and so the whole process is dealt with at that point. But in this case, where you have harvesting takes place on the farm or the ranch, it presents some problems that we would have to be dealt with.
Thank you.
Great, thanks, Bill. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2525. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2364 and ask Representative Wilson to join us. And Jenny, go ahead, come on up with Representative Wilson. Talk to us about probably some error I made, because I think I helped get all the language negotiated and must have missed something.
I would never say that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass, Cape Junction, Merlin, and Murphy Williams, all points in between. A pleasure to be before your committee today. Obviously, one of the finest committees in the entire legislature.
Amen.
Hey, he really wants to get this fixed done, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I heard him say that to my other committee, though. It's kind of weird.
I'm sorry. Anyway, thanks for your prompt attention to the bill, talking about basically a technical fix that will allow Department of Ag to continue to offer their fine mediation services. With that said, I'd like to introduce Jenny Dressler from Farm Bureau, who will fill in the details.
Thank you. Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler from the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I appreciate the opportunity to come and join Representative Wilson today to talk about House Bill 2364. A little bit of background. In the 2015 session, Chair Brian Clem convened a work group on general agricultural coexistence issues. The focus at the beginning was genetic engineering and some of the concerns that some folks in the community had expressed, and how can we all get along. The concept soon grew to coexistence among all agricultural commodities. Representative Wilson was brought in on the industrial hemp and cannabis, or the marijuana conflicts, some of those that were coming out during the 2015 session. And when we started to realize that this applied not just to one production method, but across all crops and commodities. And Scott Dahlman, I know, is going to follow up with me, and he'll probably talk about some of the details about House Bill 2509, but the passed back in 2015. But we really saw that bill as an opportunity to come together as an ag community and facilitate discussions in a way that is voluntary and that encourages folks to come to the table without government intervention, essentially government telling farmers what they can grow and where they can grow it. And from Farm Bureau's perspective, this is the preferred way to address these conflicts, and it's the way that we've done this for over 100 years in Oregon. So you'll see my testimony was passed out. What this bill does is really just fix a technical error in the statute. So in 2015, two bills passed that related to the Department of Ag's mediation program. This first one, House Bill 2509, expanded it from simply labor mediation, which they've been doing for several years very successfully, to essentially crop conflict mediation. At the same time, House Bill 2444 passed, which deleted a statute that was referenced that gave the authority to the Department of Ag to expand that program. So we expanded their program and then accidentally deleted a statute or a statutory reference in the next bill that passed. We only learned this during the rulemaking process, which is when I subsequently contacted Representative Wilson and asked if he'd be willing to help us make a technical fix to a bill that I know a lot of us in this room worked on. So that's the history. I tried to highlight those statutory references for the committee in my testimony, but happy to take any questions or...
It wasn't really my fault. Like, we had the bill right.
No, it wasn't.
You didn't tell me there was another bill moving.
No,
it's your fault.
No,
it's your fault.
It's, yeah, I did not tell you there was another bill moving.
Vice Chair Flynn.
A little offensive.
Okay, well, we'll leave all of that to you folks. The only question I had was just, did that have any budgetary mistakes as well? I mean, as far as it being able to expand another program, or was it more concept versus budget?
Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, I don't remember budgetary implications, but the Department of Ag is in the room as well, and they might be able to answer that question directly.
Lauren, do you want to come up or start making your way up? Any other questions? It has been interesting to think about the different issues that have come up. You know, Chair Whittle recall and Representative Esquivel some painful discussions about canola and other brassicas, hemp and marijuana, certainly, you know, whatever type of crop that had a GMO in it, a neighboring one. And so this program hadn't really been used for this. It was, as Jenny said, mostly about labor kind of mediation when there were real problems. But instead of having the legislature trying to mediate between all these different parties, the thought was, let's get them talking to each other and use professional mediators to mediate. And what we found was there were some federal programs available. Not all parties would be comfortable with that entity. There were costs associated with some. Others had it for free. And so we kind of worked out this concept to try and please not bring your conflicts to the legislature. Why don't you try talking to each other first? Then we can see how that goes before these committees have to take, you know, people that we care about on both sides of issues, usually farmer versus farmer or grower versus grower. And it's just kind of awkward if they haven't tried reaching out to each other first to ask us to play referee. Lauren, what do you think about that last question?
For the record, Lauren Henderson, I'm the Assistant Director with the Department of Ag. Regarding the budget question, it does not have a fiscal for ODA because ODA does not actually do the mediation itself. We contract with other mediators, and so anyone that uses the program, other than the labor cases, which we do use our general fund for those, and there's some reasons why if you're not getting paid, the last thing you're going to be able to probably afford is the mediation. So we do try to help that. But for this bill, anybody that wanted to use the mediation is bringing forth an issue would pay for that, or through our contracted mediators, or use the USDA service, which is free. This particular bill fixes what ended up to be a circular dead end, which prevented us or anyone from choosing ODA as one of their two choices, and so it really only left them with the USDA choice.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair McLean.
So my interpretation of what you just said is no, there is no other budget implications, and that it's simply allowing for the full program to be used. Instead of one or two, there might even be three opportunities for people to choose the resources they want to use, and they'll pay for at least two of them.
Chair Clem and Vice Chair McLean, that's correct.
Okay.
Great. Any further questions for this group? And we've got one more witness. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Wilson, for bringing the bill. A little cleanup never hurts. Scott Dahlman, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Dahlman, Policy Director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Just as a reminder, OFS represents farmers, foresters, and other users of pesticides, fertilizer, and biotechnology. I'm asking you to support House Bill 2364, which, while it is simply a technical fix, this is a very important law that a lot of work went into a couple of years ago. So we believe that Oregon's agricultural diversity is what makes it so special. special, with over 200 different commodities and different methods, including conventional, organic, biotech, identity preserved. We are very unique. The problem is, because of this diversity, conflicts can arise, but we do believe that coexistence is possible and is key to the success of all segments of Oregon agriculture. Unfortunately, in 2015, there are a few bills that attempted to pit one type of agriculture against others instead of promoting neighbors working together. Thankfully, Chair Clem at that time pulled together a group of stakeholders. We spent several nights a week for several weeks going through the issues and trying to take a broad look. While the original focus, as Jenny mentioned, was on genetically engineered crops and potential conflicts with other crops, it quickly became apparent that the issue of coexistence is much, much bigger than just those two types of methods. So the group at that time decided that we should take a broader look at the issue and also determined that having the legislature or the Department of Ag telling growers what crops they could grow on their land was not an avenue we wanted to move down. So, through all of that work, we produced House Bill 2509, which encouraged neighbors with coexistence conflicts or potential conflicts to engage in mediation before litigation. Mediation provides a lot more options than litigation does, which is one of the reasons we really thought it was a good solution. For example, oftentimes the coexistence issue can be addressed just through staggering planting times. And that's something that two growers getting in a room together could figure out, but two growers getting in a courtroom together were never going to come to that solution. So it was a very, very important bill. It had broad bipartisan support in both chambers, passing unanimously in the Senate and only one vote in opposition in the House. So everybody agreed that this was a great way to move forward. But as you've already heard, our rulemaking revealed a problem that one of the references in the bill went to a piece of statute that was no longer there anymore. And so this is a simple correction. So this is probably the simplest bill you'll read all year. It literally changes one number. But the reason we're here is because that is very important to have this program available, to make sure that we have this program going forward to deal with coexistence issues, and so that we don't have groups coming to the legislature again asking you to pit one type of agriculture against another. So I ask you to support this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Scott?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2364, open a public hearing on House Bill 2076, ask Chris Allenack to join us, and Russ, do you want to come at the same time just so we get lose less transit time? And Chris, tell us about this tax credit.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This particular tax credit for fish screen devices, it's 50%. Chris Allenack for the Legislative Revenue Office. It's a 50% tax credit for costs for installing a fish screening device up to $5,000. And then I don't know, because I think the department is here, if you wanted me to talk about the process at all or not, or is that...
Let's have the department talk a little bit more about the fish screen element.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Russ Stoff. I'm the Rogue Watershed Manager for the department in Central Point. I'm filling in this week for Shannon Hearn, who's out of town. And with me today, I've got Alan Ritchie, who's the program manager for our fish screens and passage program. And Alan can answer questions and give a brief explanation of the program.
Good morning. For the record, Russ was correct. My name is Alan Ritchie with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm our Fish Screens and Passage Program Manager. Through this program, we operate a voluntary cost-share program with water users who are interested in installing fish screens or fish passage structures to benefit fish runs and throughout the state. This is a voluntary program that benefits both fish and water users. Typical projects are implemented with funds from both ODFW and the water user. Of the water user's actual contribution, 50% of those up to a maximum of $5,000 per project are eligible for this cost share or for this tax credit.
We're spending something in the neighborhood of $30,000 a year That's about right.
It's about 30,000 a biennium. There's the amount claimed every year averages about 25,000, and then the amount that actually reduces tax liability is about 15,000.
Okay. Any questions about how the program works? Tax credit up to what was the cap?
Five grand.
Yeah. And when's it up for sunset? Otherwise.
At the end of this year.
July.
January.
So this session is the time to renew it, or it sunsets before we come in. Unless we're here in special sessions, this is it.
Correct.
God, please don't have that be true. Okay. I've got three other witnesses, so thanks for explaining the mechanism. Pretty straightforward. Garrett, Tom Wolf and Joe Rowlater. Okay. Maybe we got two against one, or two for, one against. So I'll do them in panels just so you don't throw, kick each other. So Joe and Tom, why don't you go first, and then Garrett will have you come. You gotta go right after they do.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Joe Rowlater. I'm a professional lobbyist here, but today I'm testifying on my own behalf. Okay. I've been associated with fish screening for a long time. I was guiding on the Deschutes, and I noticed that there were seagulls in the field behind us. And this has been about 30 years ago. So I asked one of the other guides in camp that night, and he told me those were steelhead smolts that were being diverted from Trout Creek out into the field, and the seagulls were eating them. Governor Roberts, in the next full session, put $400,000 of general fund money in her budget so the department could do an assessment of the unscreened diversions. And OSP did a float-by on the Willamette, and the number of unscreened diversions they found on the Willamette River between Eugene and Salem was absolutely phenomenal. Because of, at least in part, because of this tax credit, and also because of a surcharge on angling license fees that was voluntarily imposed by fishermen. And I'm not really sure. It started out as 25 cents per annual angling license. It's probably more than that now. But there's also lottery money and federal money available to go into the fish screening program, and it's been very successful. I was on the Deschutes not very long ago, and Trout Creek no longer had seagulls. The week before the legislature starts, I fished in Roseburg for a week, steelhead fishing, and I noticed as we floated down the river that even though the pumps were pulled out and not in use, the irrigation pumps had screens. So the idea of a screen on a irrigation pump is it slows down the intake velocity so that small fish don't get impinged on the screen. And those devices were in place, and I was actually very gratified to see that. So as a fisherman and as a citizen of the state of Oregon, I really support the fish screening tax credit in House Bill 2076. Thank you.
Yeah, Tom. Chair Clem, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, here representing the 3,200 members we have in the state and the 155 we have nationwide. Trout Unlimited prides itself on working closely with farmers, with other people to do projects to enhance and protect wild fisheries. And as Joe was mentioning, one of the key things that we've done that's happened over the last few years is the incentives that have happened to encourage fish screening, because fish not having screening on irrigation has been a major problem for a number of years. And thanks to both the tax credit within that will be extended within House Bill 2076 and the fee that Joe mentioned, there's much more encouragement for landowners to screen their diversion program. So this is a great program. We encourage this. We think and we urge your committee to pass this through, because we think this does a lot
for wild fish, and it also is an encouragement to landowners to screen their diversions. Thank you.
Okay, and Garrett.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, my name is Garrett Rosenthal, and I'm speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon. Personally, I have to say I'm all in favor of fish screens and protecting fish, because I think fish are a cultural resource and critical to our sort of our whole ethic here in the Northwest. But from the and I'm sure you know from Tax Fairness Oregon's, and you have testimony in front of you. I might have been short one. I apologize. Tax Fairness Oregon, you're going to hear this several times this year. First of all, we have to stop spending money that we don't have, and particularly where we are talking about things that are required by law, where they're necessary, or where we have economically viable entities that should be footing the bid, should be footing the bill. As the testimony points out, 24 it was used 24 times in 2015, and half of those were for required situations. And the testimony, there's a bunch of information from the Daily Historian that summarizes basic elements of the program, and it has provided some success, but it also supplements existing programs on the part of ODF&W to provide technical assistance. Our suggestion is that, as Tax Fairness, that the current program sends the wrong message. It says we can continue to delay putting in fish screens for another until 2024, and that we're not in any hurry, and I think that that's the wrong message. Our suggestion would be, and also in the interests of economics, would be to say you have until till the end of, as the testimony says, till the end of 2019 to install the screens and to apply for the money. You have until the end of the current funding cycle, which is 2018, and that sends a message that fish screens are necessary and that we just don't have the money to support as many programs as we would like to until the revenue issues are resolved. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Klein.
Well, I appreciate all three of your testimony today, because I think it really sets up an issue that we're going to be hearing again and again during the budget season. And, you know, I noticed that this one started in 1989. And so, you know, I think every speaker up here, even those speaking against this actual, you know, extension of the tax credit, says we want to protect our fish. But I think it's really important for the message that we should be reviewing all tax credits, and we should be reviewing if this is the best tax credit for protecting fish. And we heard some very good ones on why it's good for the irrigation system, you know, problem. But I do think that it's important for this committee and all ways and means, and I know we've got three sitting right here, that basically are going to be looking to make sure that those dollars are going to, if we're going to make it a tax credit that we spend it on, that it's going to be the very best tax credit. So I thank you for bringing the problem, you know, front and center. And I think we've got a lot of work to do, but I think review is always good, and that we shouldn't just assume that it's going to go forward whether we've got money or not. It's important for us to do it on a regular basis with a criteria that says, do we still need this? Is it the best way to go? And is there technology maybe that we didn't know in, you know, 1989 that could help us more than that particular screen? But thank you so much for being here today and waiting so long to testify.
Other questions or comments for this group? Okay. That's the end of my list. Thank you for coming, gentlemen. This is the public hearing. I'm going to close the public hearing, House Bill 2076. Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, everybody. I'm going to adjourn the... Oh, wait. Hold on. Sorry, real quick. While I have a quorum still, we have enough LCs now bundled together to try and get a motion to introduce some committee bills. I don't know. I don't think we have any more coming.
Hi.
Yes.
You're acknowledging me.
Yeah,
Chair Clem.
Chair Springer.
I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 3297, dated 2117, LC 3298, dated 2117, LC 3379, dated 12317, and LC 2023, dated 2217.
Vice Chair Springer moves that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: 3297, 3298, 3379, 2023. Discussion, I can just briefly run through what they are. The first two have to do with accessory dwelling units on EFU land, and also things like RVs being parked on EFU land. And trying to make it clear what you can do in that regard if you want to have somebody be in an RV. It came out of a Marion County issue where somebody was, I think, homeless and living in an RV on right next to a farmhouse. Got on the Portland News that Marion County was about to start fining the farm owner thousands of dollars per day for letting this homeless person, I think their home maybe had burned down, and they let them stay in an RV, and technically that was questionable whether they could stay in the RV rather than go homeless. So the Marion County Commissioner worked with the Charlotte Lehan from Clackamas County, but they both simultaneously came up with an idea for some sideboards around it, but how to make it clear you could let somebody live in an RV on your EFU land if it was right in next to the farmhouse. And then I forgot whose or this one came from, but it's limiting the tax rate a city or county may impose on commercial instruction. And I don't recall now who asked us to introduce. It sounds like a John Chandler kind of move. And then the last one has to do with the way employees are counted in the paid sick leave law that we passed, and trying to make sure family members working on farm are not counted as full-time employees. So those are the four bills. Obviously, as usual, none of voting to allow the introduction of a bill implies you actually support or oppose the concept. It's just to let the bill get started, and then we'd have hearings. And Vice Chair McClain.
I just want to say, after the experience from last Friday from Revenue, that I want to go on record saying I don't know if I'm in favor at all. I don't know where they originated from, and I will do a thorough review of anything that's in front of the committee.
Was that the car, used car tax you're talking about? Yeah. Yep. Noted for the record. Okay. Any other discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the bills are introduced as committee bills. And thank you for that. And let me adjourn the committee.
Okay. I have to leave my calls on my calendar. Signage real quick. All right.